This moves a month and a half ago. So I want to thank the organizers for inviting me back, especially because I'm out of money. I have to get my Canadian money out so that I can pay rent. And if you looked at the program, my talk title is a little bit different from what it says. I'm just going to talk about a subset of what was on the program. And it's essentially the idea that dark matter could have a flavor, and in particular the flavor symmetries of the standard model could actually lead to the stabilization of dark matter. So, and this is work with Joseph, you all know, and Michael Stanowski. And it's been, so really this is kind of a new idea, giving dark matter a flavor. There's been just a few kind of studies done this year that are definitely related to what we've been doing. So I'll just point those out. So when you think about physics beyond the standard model, and you build models to solve whichever problems you're interested in solving, you encounter these sort of very generic phenomenological problems. So for example, you've got baryon, lepton number violation, and this would manifest in the decay of nucleons. You have new sources of flavor and CP violations. These are very large flavors of neutrophils, you don't want that. And you can also have new contributions which lead to deviations from molecular precision tests. So, for example, deep corrections to vacuum polarizations of the gauge boson. And so a very common tool that model builders use to circumvent these problems is to impose symmetries to predict dangerous terms or dangerous interactions. So the most common example that you all know of is the discrete symmetry. So, for example, you know, R parity, and the OH parity, KK parity, the universal extra dimension. And those do a very nice job, typically, at eliminating these two problems. So, you can eliminate very uncomfortable number of violating surface terms with these discrete symmetries and electric precision deviations. And so in the MSSM, our parity is often both to eliminate renormalizable terms in the superpotential, which for example is DNL violation. And often when you do this, there's this nice side effect that you have this new symmetry, so there are certain particles that are odd in this symmetry. And so the very nice side effect is that the lightest odd particle is stable, can be a dark matter candidate. So in a lot of these theories, you don't put the symmetry in with this motivation, but you get it as a side effect, the fact that you get a dark matter. Notice, though, that typically these symmetries actually don't help you so much with flavor and CP violation. So, for example, in the MSSM, you have to assume something about the way Susan is broken to avoid those problems. But there is this other symmetry principle out there on the market known as minimal flavor violation. And the idea here, which I'll explain in more detail in a moment, is that the flavor symmetry of the standard model is broken only by the standard model you power. And this does, by design, deal with this problem of excessive flavor change in deeper terms or resources of violation. And so, in analogy with these discrete symmetries, I want to ask the question, can MFD, and this is symmetry principle designed to protect us from flavor violation, can that provide a dark matter candidate? And of course, the answer I'm going to tell you is yes. So just let me tell you about MFD in one slide. And this idea goes back sort of into the 80s when people were thinking about flavor change in neutrons and due to the technicolor and the symmetry. But it's most distinctly formulated, most taken by at all. And so the idea is that here's the standard model of quark power.
And I'm just going to focus on the quark sector for this talk. In the limit that you set the Yukawas to zero, a large global symmetry emerges. So the non-abelian part of that symmetry is SU3Q, press SU3Q right, press SU3Q right. Essentially, you're rotating the three quarks by a unitary transformation. And, of course, when you turn on the U-powers, you have to give masses to the quarks. This is going to break that symmetry. Now, the MFV hypothesis is simply that in the presence of new physics, the standard model U-powers remain the only source of flavor breaking. And this is very nice because it gives you a sort of a protection mechanism against large flavor changing neutral currents. The way you can sort of implement this at sort of the technical level is that you can promote these U-power matrices to spurion fields, which have transformation properties, and then you just write down your Lagrangian in a flavor invariant way. Okay? So the idea that we're going to pursue is that we're going to try to give dark matter flavor quantum numbers. And so dark matter will now transform under this global flavor symmetry, GQ. So we'll have some quantum numbers under this symmetry group. And so we're going to add a new matter multiplet, I. And it's going to be a color singlet. Dark matter doesn't have color. It's going to contain an electric and neutral component. And so there's a variety of SU2 cross U1 quantum numbers that will do that for you. And as we said, it's going to transform now non-trivially under the flavor group. And so generally, we can sort of write the representation under the flavor group in this way. So it has different quantum numbers under each of the three SU3 groups. And so N and M here can take, essentially they just count the number of fundamental type indices and number of any fundamental type indices. So N can be, for example, 1, 0, that would be a fundamental or a triplet under SU3Q. Would have 1, 1, that would be an octet. So many possibilities. And what I want to ask, then, given these conditions, and if I impose MFV, for which representations under the flavor group is chi stable? And before I do that, I just want to say that I'm not the first person to think of, by any means, to think of new matter transforming into the flavor group. So there's been a number of studies, sort of bottom-up studies, looking at new matter transforming under the flavor group. People here have worked on it, so Maxime and Cliff and Mike, especially Mike has been looking at this in a lot of detail in the last few years. And it's interesting to think about, especially in light of these recent Tevatron anomalies. So having matter that transforms under the flavor group can help you explain these anomalies without having large sources of flavor violation. So just from that point of view, it's worth thinking about matter that transforms into the flavor group. Now, the main difference that's going to be in these models that I'm going to consider is that these particles that I'm adding are going to couple to quarks at the renormalizable level, whereas all of the rest of these do. And that's because we want a stable dark matter candidate. All right, so let me go back to this question of stability. So what I want to do is ask the question, what are the conditions under which chi could decay? And so a general operator that mediates the decay of chi will have, of course, one chi field. And since chi has flavor, we have to add some other flavor fields. So you can have quarks, and you can also have U-power spurions. And so in this notation, A is just the number of quark fields, some arbitrary number. B is the number of anti-quark fields. G is the number of U-power spurions. And I want to ask what are the conditions for me to be able to form a flavor and color singlet under this? So all we really are going to do here is just count indices and see if we can contract on the indices. Okay. So for each SU3 group, color, and then flavor groups, this operator will have some number of indices which need to be contracted. and some P and Q indices under this particular SU3. And the only way to form a singlet is for SU3 groups, there's this fact that the triality, a quantity called triality, has to vanish. And triality is essentially just the number of fundamental indices minus the number of anti-fundamental indices for R3. And the way you can understand this is that in SU3 you have two invariant tensors to contract indices delta ij and epsilon ijk. So because of epsilon ijk, you have this mod 3 condition. But really all I'm doing here is just seeing, okay, how can I contract all of the different indices to form this operator? Okay, so for given this operator, now we can just calculate each of these trialities. Back in business. All right, so here are the conditions. If you just go ahead and do that counting, so TC, that's the triality under SU3 color, and so just to look at that, chi doesn't have color. Obviously, it's going to be the dark matter. So A denotes the number of Q fields. Q has color, so this will be A fundamental indices. That would be the P value. B anti-fundamental, and then you just do this counting for each type of index. And you get these various conditions, and you see that the flavor triality does depend on the representation of chi. Okay. So the point is that if these conditions are hold, then that operator is allowed in Lagrangian chi to be k. And so if they're not, if they don't hold, then conversely, chi will be stable. So just if you add last three equations and subtract the first, you get this ultimate condition that n minus m mod 3 equals 0. And n is just the sum of fundamental indices across all the flavor groups. Okay, so if this condition holds, then the operator is allowed in Lagrangian conformal singlet. Conversely, if this condition does not hold, n minus m mod 3 is not equal to 0, then chi is stable. And so there's lots of ways you can arrange for this to happen. So here I'm just writing down the lowest dimensional representations in this n space. And so you could have 0, 0, that would just be a flavor singlet. And 0 minus 0 mod 3 is 0, so that can decay. So that's not going to give you a dark matter candidate. But then there's lots of representations that do. So 1 comma 0, that would be sort of triplets under any of the groups, or anti-triplets. Or you've got 2 comma 0, that would be a sextet, or a mixed representation of 3-3. And then you get down to 1 comma 1, that's octets and 3-3 bars. Those won't be stable, and then you could keep going as long as you wanted to.
You included the Yukawa insertions in the calculation, right?
Yeah. So those are the G and H and I and J. Yeah.
Are you assuming anything about the spin of the document?
No.
Okay.
All right, so now there are these various representations that give you a stable candidate, and now it just remains to specify the electroweak quantum numbers so that you get a neutral component. And so there are in principle many different types of models of flavored dark matter that you could study. All right, so I just want to go through the phenomenology of one simple example. I'm not going to do any exhaustive study of all of those models, but I just want to look at a very simple model to illustrate some of the phenomenological issues. And what we're going to see is that in some ways it's very nice and predictive because what we know about flavor works its way into the physics of dark matter. So things like Yukawa, eigenvalues, and CKM elements will play a role in the physics of dark matter. All right, so the dark matter field that I want to study is a scalar field, And it's a gauge singlet under the standard model, so it doesn't couple to any of the gauge bosons in the standard model. And then it's going to be a triplet under SU3Q. Okay, so that satisfies those general conditions that we wrote down. So here's the Lagrangian, it has a kinetic term. This index I is the flavor index, so there's three flavors, I goes from 1 to 3. And then there's the scalar potential here. This will determine the spectrum and the couplings to the standard model of Higgs boson. And then it also, in principle, could be some effective operators coupling dark matter to the quarks. All right, so the scalar potential, this is relevant for determining the spectrum. So in general, there are many terms, but let me just look at a couple that are important for the spectrum. So you have a usual mass term here, S star S, and then a Higgs portal term, S star S, H dagger H. And so when H gets a VEV, this will contribute to the mass. And so you can see, in addition to sort of a typical diagonal term, you can also have Yukawa insertions, which are allowed by the flavor symmetry. And these will tend to split the spectrum of these flavored dark matter components. So in general, there are many different insertions of these spurions you can have, but you can just keep the leading ones in Y. Does have the order one top Yukawa, so those are the most important. All right, so now to get the spectrum, we can without loss of generality rotate to these background values. So lambda d, lambda u are the diagonal Yukawa matrices with the eigenvalues, and d is the CKM matrix. And diagonalize this will give us the spectrum. And you can see as I kind of foretold, this the third component, the third generation component of this dark matter multiplet. It's an order one splitting because of the large top Yukawa. While the other two typically have a spectrum. So these are the possible spectra. You can have a normal spectrum with a heavy third generation dark matter and a light first and second. These would be the real dark matter here, this would decay. Or you can have an inverted spectrum where the third component is lightest and the dark matter. Next, you could have, in principle, you could also have effective operators which couple dark matter to quarks. And so this goes along the lines of looking at effective field theories of dark matter, which many people have studied, including Patty and others. And so the idea is that you can write down these various operators coupling quarks to the dark matter. So there's a variety of different operators that you can have at the leading dimension 6 level. And also a variety of flavor structures which are encoded in these coefficients C. And so for each of these, there's a variety of flavor structures that are allowed by the MFP. And we really don't know from an effective field theory point of view which of these are preferred. We can go ahead and just look at the phenomenology of each one and put constraints on them. A given UV completion might induce some of these structures or some of these operators and not others. And so you kind of have to be agnostic about what really is preferred here, just go ahead and constrain them. But just to emphasize this, in the existing effective field theory studies so far, typically a very rigid flavor structure has been imposed. Just sort of the minimal thing that is consistent with flavor constraints. You can't just couple arbitrarily to light quarks. You'd be way in violation of flavor change neutral curve. But so this offers some kind of a more general way to approach these. So there's a number of different flavor structures which could lead to different phenomenology. So I'm again not going to be lazy again and not study all of these at the moment, but just study one operator. And this will kind of highlight all of the different issues. So I'm going to say the following operator couples two quarks, a Q left and a D right to the dark matter. And you have to have the Yukawa insertion to make it flavor invariant. And after electric symmetry breaking and diagonalization, you get the following effective interactions. So you can see that the CKM matrix is working its way in, and the Yukawa downtype matrix is working its way in. And so this is going, flavor is going to affect or dark matter physics. I'm going to focus now for the rest of the talk on the inverted spectrum. So with S3 is the dark matter, it's going to be the lightest state, and these other two flavors will decay. And the first thing we can look at is the relic abundance. And so if you fish out of this operator, here are the components with S3, okay? And you find that the dominant operator that affects the annihilation cross-section is just this coupling to the third generation quarks, just as you expect. You're looking at the third generation as your dark matter candidate, and the flavor symmetry is telling you it wants to couple more strongly to the third generation. So the dominant annihilation mode is dark matter to BB bar. This is the annihilation cross-section, and then just normalizing on a picobarn value to get the WMAP relic abundance. It singles out a scale of around 200 GeV. So what it means is that you should be thinking about UV completions. The scale isn't too high above. It's roughly right at the weak scale, so you should be thinking about it, but still you can work in the effective field theory limit and study the phenomenology of this operator. Direct detection, again, you take that general operator and fish out the components which couple S3 to the scalar quark operator. And the scalar quark operator is important because that's what mediates the spin-independent scattering cross-section. And so actually, you notice that it couples proportional to the mass of the quark, and that's sort of typical with scalar operators. But additionally, there's a CKM suppression for the first and second generation. And so that's a result of this special planar structure. And what it means is that really only, in this example, really only the B quark content of the nucleon is relevant for direct detection. So this is the matrix element that we need. And you can calculate the nucleon cross-section, dark matter nucleon cross-section. And for the scale that gives you the right relic abundance, you could be sort of at the level where xenon 100 is probing and be consistent with balance.
What are the SU2 cross U1 quantum numbers?
Singlet, in this example. If it was a charge and you have additional.
But then it's also dangerous because it's so light.
Yeah.
It wouldn't survive. Huh?
And
then Z would have additional decay.
Right. Then it would be heavier. Yeah, only probably the singlet sample would be light. Alright, so here's a plot of these various constraints. So this is a standard lambda M3 plane. The relic abundance is in the gray shaded band here. And so you can see that just as we calculated, this is roughly at 200 GeV, get up in mass. The xenon 100 constraints are in the red. And so it's sort of ruling out this region between 10 and 60 or 70 GeV. One thing I want to note is that there's a phase in this effective operator, and the scattering cross section depends on the real part of C, because essentially that's what gives you the scalar CP even operator. And so you could play with that phase if you really wanted to. It's just a free parameter, so you could play with that to weaken those constraints. This is a xenon one-ton projection, and then these are the CMB constraints from dark matter annihilation or recombination, which was worked out by Doug and Tracy and discussed yesterday.
I don't get it. So if you can play with the phase, you can also affect in which wave they would annihilate, in S or P wave. So if it's a side-by-side operator on the standard model side, then...
So they annihilate, and so both enter into the annihilation.
No, but one is P wave.
If it doesn't look like it.
Well, then it's not right. Because
I think it's right.
Well, you cannot annihilate into S wave due to the psi bar psi operator. You need psi bar gamma mu psi to annihilate in S wave.
But it's scalar though.
Yes, it's a sidebar psi annihilates in P wave.
So it's two scalars annihilating to two quarks. And you're saying that.
There's a scalar. Sorry, it's the way around. It's, it would be,
yeah, I can imagine it.
So, sorry, no, it's a scalar. Because you have it on the receiving end, this scalar, super scalar combination, right?
Yeah. So here the point is that in large mass limit, then this just becomes square root. So you can't really move the relic component. All right. Since this is flavored dark matter, we might think about flavor constraints. But since we're imposing MFV and also dark matter is coupling in pairs, the effects would be loop at the loop level. Not even this is going to be okay. So, for example, you could have a contribution to this effective operator here, which mediates KK bar mixing. And typically, this is very constrained. But in these models with MFV, from these loop diagrams, you can calculate it and. It's actually suppressed by a strange fork. It should be the strange fork mass squared over W mass squared. So this is not a problem in this model. But other effective operators could give you a more powerful probe.
Is it obvious that if you UV complete your model, that there wouldn't be more leading?
It could be. So there could be additional effective operators which would mediate that. So it's not obvious. Someone has to look in detail at that specific model. Also, you could think about monojet constraints or just pair producing these heavy flavors which decay. And these are going to be negligible as well because of this flavor structure. The couplings are the light quarks are tau suppressed. And so these partonic processes are very small. Alright, so just let me talk in general about the predictions of this flavored dark matter scenario. So of course, besides just the dark matter, you're going to have heavy flavors of this dark matter. And in general, the heavy flavors, depending on your model, could either be stable or unstable. And if they're stable, then you could have multi-component dark matter with different masses. And potentially you could look for that at direct detection experiments by looking at recoil spectrum if you had a signal and a lot of data. Or you could look at spectroscopy at diversity. Trying to determine masses in pencil mixing. If they're unstable, then the decay modes are typically flavor sensitive. Again, because one type of dark matter flavor likes to couple to one type of quark, so the decay modes are flavor sensitive. And the production mechanisms will be again model dependent. So you could have direct production, like I was considering here. But with some operators, this would not be as small and can definitely be profiled by LHC. And so, for example, there have been many studies recently on these effective field theories in which LHC does have a sensitive probe to these direct production. You could also have, if you're thinking about a UV completion, you could imagine new particles which are generating these operators. And they're going to have color, so you could produce them. And so you could produce these sort of connectors which mediate interactions between dark matter and quarks, and those decay also in a flavor sensitive way. Eventually, you'll get down to dark matter plus additional standard model particles, or you could produce them in the decay of the resonance. So, for example, the Higgs could decay in these singlet models. That the Higgs could this coupling with the Higgs portal can mediate the decay of the Higgs. Sort of as Maxime was discussing, the signatures will be a little bit different in this case. So we can look at that example in a minute. Just the decay of these heavy flavors, as I said, they're sort of sensitive to the flavor of the dark matter. And so in this effective operator, you have have mixing between one type of flavor and the other. And so you have the case where S2 is going into S3, and a light jet and a B jet. And the B jet just comes up because you have an S3 at the end of the decay chain. And this is in this example, this is a prompt decay, so you would see all of these. And so in this example with the higher dimension operator that we were considering, you could have a signature where you produce a Higgs in association with a Z, and the Higgs can then decay into these dark, heavy dark flavors, which then cascade into the dark matter and B jets, and then plus regular fields. And so we did a collider study of a benchmark point here. So in this benchmark, there are these heavy flavors are 25 GeV each, and the dark matter is 10 GeV. And we can arrange, we have three parameters, so we can arrange if we want to have the Higgs decay sort of exclusively to these heavy dark flavors. And there's a number of backgrounds for this. So the signature here is a Z, so two dileptons reconstructed Z, and then B-jet plus MET. And so there are various backgrounds to that. And after a number of cuts, you can see this at 14 TeV with 15 inverse spectral bonds. It's not an early LHC signal, but you can eventually see it. Of course, this isn't the most generic signal of all of these flavors, dark matter models, but it's just one example within this vector field. All right, so let me wrap up. So I've tried to argue that flavor symmetries and MFB can provide stability on the dark matter, and actually provides a pretty interesting organizing principle for the physics of dark matter. As we saw, the physics of flavor that we know about, CKMs and Yukawa's work their way into the dark matter physics. And the predictions are these heavy flavors of dark matter, which you can search for at colliders. And of course, there's many future directions. Very, very little work has been done on this scenario. So I've just listed a few here. But there are many future directions that one could look at in this scenario.
Any questions?
So you showed this inverted scenario. What are the differences in the other scenario?
This other scenario. In principle, it would be fine, but it doesn't work as well in terms of the relic abundance. Just for this example, because then you're coupling to white quarks, and you don't get very efficient annihilation, because it becomes always suppressed with your power. So just in this example, at least, it didn't work as well, just from a thermal history. Of course, you could have invoke some other population mechanism or invoke some new annihilation channels. So it was just that this one worked pretty well, and the other one didn't work as well.
Any other question? Well, let's invite him in.